I'd like the organizers for inviting me to give a talk here, and so the topic of the talk will be the Jordan Hölder series of nearby cycle sheaves on certain Shimura varieties. And I find flag varieties. And this is joint work with Tom Haynes. Okay, so I'll start with some definitions about the affine flag variety. And I, in my talk, will always talk about GLN, although everything can be done for GSP2N as well, and actually, in the function field case, even for more general groups. So, and then let K be a field, and I'd like to remind you of the affine Grassmannian and the affine flag variety. So we have the affine Grassmannian, which I denote by Grass over K. This is an in scheme over K. And we can define it as the quotient of the points of G with values in the Laurent series over K mod points of G with values in the power series. And we can also see it as a moduli space of lattices. So this is the space of lattices in KT to the N, that is, so KT lattice. And we have a stratification I mean of course this group G of power series and T acts on the affine Grassmannian, and we can decompose it into orbits under this group, and we get a stratification into cells Q mu, where mu ranges over the dominant co-weights. And here Q mu is the orbit of G power series of representative of mu in this group. And we can describe the closure of a cell Q mu, and this is just the disjoint union. I mean, of course, not in a scheme theoretic sense, but it's stratified by locally closed subschemes Q lambda, where lambda is less or equal to mu. So this is the affine Grassmannian. And on the other hand, the affine flag variety, flag, this is also an in scheme over K, and we can construct it in a similar way as a quotient, namely the quotient of G Laurent series modulo the Vahori subgroup, you know, this by script B. And we can also see this as the space of lattice chains, complete lattice chains. In the Laurent series field to the n, this is a complete okay. This is the apparent flag variety, and in a similar way we get a stratification. We get, and of course as in the finite dimensional case, or analogous to the finite dimensional case, we here, oh wait, maybe just let me write down first what B is. So B is the standard Iwahori subgroup. So this is just the inverse image of B, which is the Borel group of upper triangular matrices. G of K, and it's the Iwahori is the inverse image under the projection of the power series valued points to G of K. So in terms of matrices, these are just matrices of the form where we have unit power series on the diagonal and arbitrary power series about the diagonal and power series with no absolute term below the diagonal. So this is the Iwahori subgroup, and we take this quotient. And so, as I said, we get a stratification again, namely by orbits of this Iwahori subgroup. So get a stratification flag is union of EW, where W ranges over the extended affine Y group, and BW is the cell corresponding to W. These are called Schubert cells. And the closure of a BW is the union of all BVs for V less than or equal to W with respect to the Brueghel order. So this is, just like the Brueghel decomposition in the finite dimensional case. And now, these, although the whole flag variety is an int scheme, these really are finite dimensional projective schemes, so they are well behaved, and we really have schemes. On the other hand, we will also need to look at a different stratification for the flag variety, which comes from the opposite Iwahori, so to say. So we let n minus be the inverse image of the unipotent radical of B minus of the opposite Borel. So we take this unipotent radical, and now we take the inverse image under the projection from G polynomials in T inverse. So not only do we take the opposite Borel, but we also replace T by T inverse, so to say, and take the projection to G of K, and n minus is the inverse image. So in terms of matrices, these are matrices which have a 1 plus T inverse times some element of K T inverse on the diagonal, and have polynomials in T inverse below the diagonal and T inverse times some such polynomial about the diagonal. This is N-, and N- also acts on the flag variety from left, so we can again consider the decomposition into N- orbits. So what we get is the flag variety is the disjoint union of the anti-cells BW, where again W ranges over the extended affine bigroup. So this is N minus times W. And now, on the other hand, since since this is an int scheme, we actually get only int schemes here, which are very big, so to say. So in a sense, you can say that these are finite codimension, and what that means is that let's first write down the following. So what's the closure of some of these guys? That's again a union of anti-cells, and again this is, so to say, given by the Brueha order, but now we have to reverse the order. So this is the union of all BV for V be greater or equal than W. So it's exactly the other way around. So I want to explain why these guys have finite codimension, and the reason is that if we look at intersections of B upper W's and B lower V's, then this is non-empty if and only if W is less than or equal to V. And in this case, the dimension of this space is just the difference of lengths. So, yeah, in some sense, this B upper W has codimension L of W. Okay, so I mean, in particular, if if we take B identity, so the anti-cell corresponding to the identity, then the closure would consist of all cells BV with V bigger than the identity, so we get a whole connected component of the flag variety. Right. Okay. Right, so these are the object we will work with, and the next thing I have to remind you of is the deformation from the Grassmannian over QP, say, to the flag variety over FP. And I mean, I'm not actually going to write this down explicitly, but I mean, we do have a deformation X over ZP, so this is an int scheme again, of course, from the Grassmannian to the flag variety. And in this case, so over ZP, this is due to Haynes and Ngo. And in the function field case, this was even even a little bit older. This is due to Greenfeld and Baldinson. Okay, so well, I mean, I'm not going exactly to tell you how that works, but I mean, basically what you have to do is to, I mean, these are, where are the definitions? I mean, here are the definitions. These are lattice chains, and these are just lattices. And I mean, basically what you have to do is to set up this deformation over ZP joint T. So then you can actually make this work. But I mean, we'll just use this now. And so since we have this deformation, what we can do is we can take a cell Q mu in the Grassmannian, and this gives rise to a ZP scheme if we just take the closure in this deformation X. So I denote this scheme by M mu, and okay, I guess that doesn't work very well. Okay. So, so the special fiber of mu is write down this way. Mu FP is a union of Schubert varieties, and actually, what we get is exactly the W's which are in the so-called mu admissible set. So this is the mu admissible set which also occurred in Rappaport's talk this morning. And I mean, it's not so important for us what it is exactly, but it can be described explicitly in a combinatorial way. And as an example, if mu is minuscule, then mu is the local model. Is the local model for a certain Shimura variety. Associated to some unitary group. With Ivahori level structure. So yeah, these are, I mean, these are in a sense generalizations of these local models. And what we do now is the following. We consider the intersection complex I see mu, so this is the intersection complex of on this, on the closure of this cell Q mu on this here, so to say. So this is the middle extension of the constant sheaf shifted in order to make it perverse, where J is the inclusion of Q mu into its closure. And then we apply the nearby cycles functor to this sheaf. So I'll, the following, once and for all, will fix the mu. So I'll just denote this by R psi. This is R psi of I c mu. So this is a perverse sheaf on mu fp bar. Perverse sheaf on the geometric special fiber, and this sheaf encodes in a sense the singularities of this scheme mu, and thus is an interesting object to study. And what I want to explain in this talk is the following. So we'll look at this sheaf in a very specific way. Namely, we are interested in its Jordan-Hölder series. So the question which simple objects occur in this perverse sheaf and with which multiplicities. So it is known that we can decompose the or write the semi-simplification of this sheaf as a direct sum ranging over the elements W in the mu admissible set. So these are the strata which occur in the special fiber, and sum over I in Z, say. And what we have here is the intersection complex for W twisted by minus I, and of course these guys can occur with a certain multiplicity. So we put some M of W and I here, where similarly as before, ICW is the intersection complex for the Schubert variety corresponding to W. So we take the shifted constant sheaf on this cell, which is smooth, and extend it to the closure. And these MWI are certain natural numbers. And the goal of this talk is to give some description, at least, of these multiplicities. So this description may not be as explicit as one maybe hopes for, or not as useful as one might hope for, but we will give some description, and so we at least are able to say certain things about these multiplicities. Now, before I'll explain that, let us look at this definition. Yep. Well, the point is that this is a B-equivariant sheaf, and it follows from that actually only these very special intersection complexes can occur. So, yeah, but I think right, I guess you have to use that at this point already. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a good point. Okay, so looking at this from a slightly different perspective, we can see that determining these multiplicities is just a purely combinatorial problem. Namely, we can just take the trace of Frobenius on both sides. We get then the trace, at some stalk. So let's since everything is equivariant here, we just have to fix one of the strata. So we take a stratum X and look at the stalk in X. So on the left-hand side, we get this trace of Frobenius, and it's equal to the sum over W, U admissible, and I. And then we have to evaluate the trace of Frobenius on these intersection complexes. Of course, this is known, the trace of Frobenius on an intersection complex. In this situation is just a certain Kazan-Lustig polynomial. So what we get here, I mean, of course, we have this multiplicity. And then we have the twist. And then we have a sign because we have shifted things. So epsilon w, where epsilon w is just minus 1 to the length of w. And then we have the Kazan-Lustig polynomial for x and w. So this is Kazan-Lustig polynomial. All right. And now I mean, although these Kazan-Lustig polynomials, of course, are pretty complicated, they can be computed explicitly. And that's also true for the trace of Frobenius, namely this trace of Frobenius is given explicitly as an element of the Iwahori-Hecker algebra. By the so-called Kodwitz conjecture, which was proved by Haynes and Ngo. So, although these elements are extremely complicated too, it's possible to explicitly compute them. In non-trivial cases, you may have to use a computer program, but certain cases, of course, can be done by hand, but in any case, you can compute them. And now, rewriting this formula in the following way, if we just look at the term for x itself here, then the Kazan-Lustig polynomial of x and x is just 1. So we see that epsilon x times this sum of multiplicities is just the same as the trace of Frobenius at x minus the sum of all other w. And since this Kazan-Lustig polynomial vanishes unless x is less or equal to w, we really only get w greater than x here. And then we have the multiplicities for w and the Kazan-Lustig polynomial. And in this way, we see that we can compute examples just by descending induction on the length of x. And so we did this. And although one cannot see very much, there is one striking observation one can make about these multiplicities. So let me just write down some of these examples. so if mu is very simple, if mu is just 1 and then all zeros, so in the so-called Greenfeld case, the multiplicities are very simple, and then we have the multiplicity for W and I is 1 if I is between 0 and the length of mu minus the length of W, and 0 otherwise. So basically all the multiplicities which really occur are equal to 1. And I mean, let me write down one more complicated case, namely the first non-trivial case, so to say, where we have GL4 and mu is 1, 1, 0, 0. And then if we look at the length 0 case, and there is actually only one stratum, the worst singularity, which is 0 dimensional, then so the multiplicity for this stratum and 0 is 1. The multiplicity for tau and 1 is 1 again. But then we get a 2, and we get 2 1s. For length 1, we get a, for 0, we get a 1, then we get a 2, a 2, and a 1. I mean, all the others are 0, so I won't write them down. And this actually occurs for 4 strata. So there are 4 one-dimensional strata, and they all have the same multiplicities. Then we have length 2. And in this case, actually, the multiplicities do not depend anymore on the length alone. So we have two cases here. We have, for certain strata of dimension 2, we have 1, 1, 1. And this actually occurs 8 times. And twice, we have 1, 2, 1. And let me write down the other ones here. For length 3, we just have 1 and 1, and this occurs 12 times. And finally, we have the extreme strata, length 4, dimension 4, there we have just 1, 1. And this is the case, I mean, we have 6 extreme strata, so this occurs 6 times. So, I mean, in this way, we produced lots of numbers for many other examples, also for non-minuscule examples, and I mean, we weren't actually able to see a pattern for most of these numbers, but there is one observation which we found kind of surprising, namely the following. So we have the following observation. The multiplicities M tau comma I for the unique zero dimensional stratum let's call this tau these actually do follow a relatively simple pattern, namely these are just the intersection Betti numbers of the cell Q mu. Or rather its closure. And so M of tau and I is the dimension of IH 2i of the closure of Q mu. And note that this closure, if we take this closure over QP, is just the generic fiber of the local model of this mu. So q mu bar, if we look at this over qp, is just the generic fiber of mu. On the other hand, it will turn out, when I explain the proof of this observation, that what naturally comes up here is really this, the closure of this cell over the finite field, or over SP bar, say. So, although when we first remarked this, we thought of a relation to the generic fiber, this is not really what naturally comes out of the proof. Anyway, this seems to be a surprising thing, even more so since you would think, in some sense, because you compute these multiplicities by descending induction on the length, that the multiplicities for the zero-dimensional stratum should be the most complicated ones. On the other hand, except from the trivial cases like the highest dimension and codimension one, these are the only ones which we found such a simple explanation for. Okay, so let me explain how one can prove this observation, and actually how one can even give a cohomological interpretation of all the multiplicities, although much more complicated. So this is point three. Logical interpretation. Okay, so let me explain a proof of this observation. So I'll use the same notation as I did here. So epsilon x is just minus 1 to the length of x. And I think what I need to is q x is q to the length of x. So then if we take the multiplicities for tau, or rather their sum, we make this into a polynomial, just the polynomial which also occurs here. Now, if we want to compute this polynomial, it's useful to look at this remark again, that we can look at these multiplicities just in the Iwahori-Hecker algebra, and what we actually do here is just changing the bases in the Iwahori-Hecker algebra. So this trace of Frobenius, the trace of Frobenius is related to this usual basis in the Iwahori-Hecker algebra, usually denoted by the Tx. And on the other hand, we have another basis given by the trace of Frobenius, by by the elements trace of Frobenius on these intersection complexes. So this is, say, it's not exactly the same, but it's related to the basis which is usually denoted by CW. And just what I want to say is we have two bases in the Iwahori-Hecker algebra, and the base change matrix is in the one direction is given by these Kajdan-Lustig polynomials. This is just what this equality here expresses. And in the other direction, The base change matrix is given by inverse Kasdan-Lustig polynomials. So actually, by definition, so to say, this is just the sum of x greater or equal to tau of the tracer Frobenius on the stalk at x. And then we have to take, we have a sign. We have a sign epsilon x. And then we have the inverse Kasdan-Lustig polynomial for tau and x. So this is the inverse Kasdan-Lustig polynomial. And now, I mean, there's one step which I cannot fully explain. So it turns out, in a technical sense, a problem for proceeding with this is that we have this sign epsilon x here. And in a more conceptual sense, it turns out that it's a good idea to go from cohomology to cohomology with compact support. Although, I mean, you do not directly see the cohomology groups here. In a sense, that's what happens. Anyway, we rewrite this in the following way. This is the same sum, and then we rewrite this thing in the following way, sum y greater than x, epsilon mu. So we again have a sign, but this is just an overall sign, so this is not really a problem anymore. And then we have the tracer Frobenius on the stalk at y, and then what comes in is an R polynomial. So these R polynomials are, I mean, some other sort of polynomials given in a combinatorial way, which come up if you deal with the Vahori-Hecker algebra. I mean, I won't write down the definition here, but actually these are in a sense much more simple than the Kasdan-Lustig polynomials and inverse Kasdan-Lustig polynomials. So these are relatively easy to deal with. So I mean, we replace this term by this sum, and then we still have the Kasdan-Lustig, the inverse Kasdan-Lustig polynomial. And now we rearrange this a little bit. So this is epsilon mu times sum over y greater than tau. And we have this trace of Frobenius on the stalk at y. And then we have the sum over x between tau and y of q tau x times r xy. So here, so nothing really has happened. No, not yet. No, I mean, I didn't use that yet. No. I mean, what I'm okay. Maybe I should say one more word. What I'm using here for this equality, I mean, this is related to the fact that if you look at this, the trace of Frobenius on a stalk here. I mean, this is the polynomial in Q. And what I use here is that this is more or less palindromic. I mean, it's not exactly palindromic, but it's palindromic up to sine. So, I mean, this is, technically speaking, that's what I'm using here. But I didn't yet use anything about the stratum itself. So I mean, so far this works for every W, not only for tau. All right, now we can replace this sum by the following. So I mean, there are, of course, with these polynomials, they satisfy a lot of combinatorial identities, and I use one of them. So we can replace this by just q to the length of y times the inverse Kasdan-Lustig polynomial for y, but now we replace Q by Q inverse. So I mean, this is just this sum, and then we have the trace of Frobenius on the stalk at Y. And now we're actually more or less done. Namely, this is just the same. Now, I mean, now we will use the fact that we here have the zero-dimensional stratum. So actually, in this case, the inverse Karsten-Lustig polynomials are extremely simple. Namely, they are just one. This is just the one. So I mean, you can just omit this. And we will rewrite this q to the length of y as the number of points in the cell. So the number of fq rational points in the cell corresponding to y. This by is just an affine space of dimension length of y. So obviously, this number of points is just q to the length of y. And then we sum over trace of Frobenius on the stalk at y. Now, since this is an active variant sheaf, the trace of Frobenius on some point in the stratum doesn't depend on the point. It's constant along the strata. So this is really just the sum of all the traces of Frobenius on points in the special fiber. So if we apply the Grothendieck-Lefschetz trace formula, from this we get that this is just epsilon mu times the trace of Frobenius on the homology with compact support with values in this sheaf R psi. And now we use the fact that if we look at the natural projection from the flag variety to the Grassmannian by just projecting a lattice chain to the first lattice in the chain, if under this projection we take a direct image of R psi, then what we get is just the intersection complex of this cell Q mu, or of its closure, rather. So actually, we see that we can rewrite this. We can replace this by the Grassmannian and the intersection complex. And in other words, we see that we just get the sum of the dimension of these intersection cohomology groups times Q to the I, which is what we wanted to prove. So, yeah, I mean, I hope this this calculation was, I'm not sure it really was helpful to show that here, but I mean, the point I want to make is just that, I mean, we rewrite this thing in some way, but then what we have is we have an expression like this, and what we get is just we can so to say relate this to the trace of some global cohomology group, in this case with the sheaf of nearby cycles in it. And now let me state what one can do in the general case, and then I'll try to say a few words how one has to, or what additional ingredients you need in order to prove the general case. Because of course, I mean the first steps here can be done for an arbitrary W instead of tau. But of course, what's not going to happen is that this inverse Karsten-Lustig polynomial simply disappears, right? And you definitely will have to deal with that in the general case. So anyway, what we have in general is the following theorem. So we again look at all the multiplicities together. This polynomial is the same as epsilon mu, so just a sign, times the trace of Frobenius on cohomology with compact support of the flag variety with the coefficients in R psi, the nearby cycle sheaf, tensored with the intersection complex of the closure of the anti-cell corresponding to W. So one thing you can see directly here is if we plug W equals to tau into this, then the closure of this anti-cell is the complete connected component, which is smooth. So this intersection complex will, in a sense, just disappear. We won't have any trouble with that in the case of W equals tau. On the other hand, for general W, it's not even clear what this should mean. So I mean, you really have to say something about this object, what it really is, because this disclosure is not a scheme, but it's just an int scheme. So I mean, this is this is not so clear. And actually, this is one of the crucial ingredients of the proof of the theorem. So so the theorem can be proved along essentially the same lines as the observation, once we have got the following two ingredients. So there are two things we have to do, and the first thing is make sense of this intersection complex, and the second thing we need to do, maybe I put it on a different blackboard. The second thing we need is we need to prove a cohomological interpretation of the inverse Kasdan-Lustig polynomials. And this is the following theorem, which I guess should be attributed to Kasdan and Lustig, although in their paper they state this as a proposition and say that it should be easy to prove this. So, but anyway, I mean, they proved this in the finite dimensional case, and let's say once we figured out the proof in our case, we probably can say that it's not too in a sense they are right, that it's not too difficult to prove this. So what the interpretation is that the inverse Kasdan-Lustig polynomial for V and Y, say, is the sum of the dimensions of the intersection cohomology groups for the intersection of the closure of the anti-cell for V with the cell for Y times Q to the I, or you can also say this is the trace of Frobenius on these intersection cohomology groups. So Kasdan and Lustig prove this in the finite dimensional case. And there's also a proof by Kashiwara and Tanisaki in the setting of mixed Hodge modules. And actually it turns out that the one thing you, I mean the main thing you have to do in order to prove this is again just make sense of this object. So once you can do this, it's not that hard anymore to prove the theorem. Of course, the theorem itself makes sense without really having an intersection complex for this closure, or because although this closure comes in here, of course the intersection is just finite dimensional. So talking about its intersection cohomology really makes sense. But in the proof, you really need to know more, or I mean, yeah, you need to know more. And well, I mean, maybe I'll just give a few very rough indications. How you construct, or yeah, how you get this intersection complex for the closure of an anti-cell. So so what you're going to do is the following. You look at the flag variety, and we've seen that this is the disjoint union of all these anti-cells, and now you take an open subscheme of the form union of all anti-cells which are less, for W less or equal to a fixed W0. So let's call this omega, and then you let n minus of n be the inverse image of and t is the torus of the k t inverse mod t to the minus n valued points of the torus under the projection n minus goes to g of k t inverse mod t to the minus n. So this is a certain subgroup of n minus, and if you choose n very large, then these groups get smaller and smaller. And so, I mean, I just say n should be sufficiently large. And then the quotient omega mod n minus of n exists and is a smooth finite dimensional scheme. And then we can do the following. I mean, I should say that we learned about the usefulness of these guys, of this omega and this quotient, from Falting's preprint on algebraic loop groups. Now what we can do is the following for b less than y less than this fixed W0. We get a diagram. So we take this omega and take the projection to this quotient. And inside there we have the product b upper y times b lower y, which contains the cell by, and this cell of course contains the intersection of b upper v closure with b lower y. And if we now look at the projection, what we get is the quotient of this product by n minus n. And it turns out that this just maps isomorphically onto its image in the quotient, and so does this. So I mean, I can't say any more about this now, but the point just is that in this way you can reduce yourself to a finite dimensional situation, and the space, I mean, although this doesn't show yet how you get the whole IC complex for the closure of BW, but at least it somehow may give an indication that why this is useful for this theorem, say, because here the space appears in a finite dimensional environment, so to say, and I mean, if you then look at the proof of Kasdan and Lustig for this theorem in the finite dimensional case, you know that you actually, once you have put yourself in this situation, then you can easily transfer the original proof to the infinite dimensional situation. Okay, so I mean this is a sketch of the proof of the cohomological interpretation of these multiplicities. Of course, I mean, it's still, this is a very complicated interpretation, and it doesn't answer all the questions about the multiplicities that one can ask from the experimental data, so to say. So, for example, one thing we are not yet able to prove in general, although it certainly seems true, is that the multiplicities always start with the 1. So the zeroth multiplicity appears always to be a 1, and we can prove this if mu is minuscule, but we cannot prove it in the general case. And actually, this is related to some funny combinatorial identity between the numbers of alcoves in the mu admissible set. So, okay, I mean, I